Hello, everyone. Good evening if you're joining me live, and welcome if you're joining us for the replay. Can I just get a quick hello in the chat box to make sure you can all see me and hear me? Let's make sure that everyone's here tonight. I can. Oh, yes, Bronte. Phew. I had it. Is it Bronte or is it Donna? I feel like it might be Donna that's on there. Hello, everyone. Dr. Yasmina, are you with us this evening? Yes, it's
Oh,
Donna.
yeah,
Okay,
I've
good.
just run upstairs with my cup of tea. Just made it in time.
Oh, good. Well, we're so happy to have you. I have my magnesium drink with me. So cheers to the tea and the magnesium. I hope you're all having your supplements if you've got some. Hi Leanne, hi Dolly. Hi, is it Gail or Gally? Gally? Oh, I'm terrible with getting pronunciation of names right. Well, guys, we're so happy that you're here. So welcome to our week four Inner Vitality live workshop. So most of you that are on here tonight will be current Inner Vitality members that are working your way through our 8-week program, but we may also have some Vitality 360 members on here tonight as well, and you guys are more than welcome to join us on this week four live workshop. The way tonight's going to run is we've essentially got four key parts to tonight's session. So strap yourself in. We've got a jam-packed hour ahead of us. So part one, we're really going to be going through gut health and inflammation, and it's quite a practical session tonight. So Dr. Yasmina's going to be talking us through some of the main gut health implications around irritable bowel, poor digestion, SIBO, etc. So if you've got any digestive issues such as IBS, then that's going to be really helpful. And also she's going to be talking to us about the link between gut health and inflammation. Then part two, we're on to weight loss and nutritional strategies around weight loss. And you guys have, done the videos on metabolic health. We've been, banging on about insulin resistance, pre-diabetes, and metabolic flexibility. So tonight we're going to get really practical and support you guys, those of you that are looking to lose weight, on some really practical tools that are all baked into the program as well. Part three. It's really interesting. It's the hidden health issues to be aware of. And the reason why we've brought this up is because since I've been working with Dr. Yasmina on these programs, it's blown my mind how many hidden health issues actually become are a lot more common and popular than we realize. Things around periodontal health, bone health, mold exposure. So we're going to bang through some of the really top ones, sleep apnea that you'll be you may or may not be aware of. And then part four will be staying on for extra question time. How does that sound, Dr. Yasmina?
Excellent. We've got lots to get through. So,
Good,
and
good.
you've also got some member stories, and I love, 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 love hearing about those. So that's also a bit I'm looking forward to.
Absolutely. I wanted to give a couple of call outs to a few beautiful members. And while I'm reading a couple of these call outs, I'd love you that's on tonight to share a mini win that you've had in the last couple of weeks. And I don't care if it's the smallest little thing that you're a little bit proud of. Yasmina, I'm going to tell you that I have been getting 8 hours of sleep. It has been because I was sick for the last few weeks, but I've kept it going. I've been getting 8 hours of sleep almost every single night, and I cannot tell you how amazing I feel. So that's my little win shared.
You guys have no idea what a big win that is, because this woman just keeps going. So to get her in bed for 8 hours is a big win. So.
I tell you what, sleep, who would have thought it, right? Well, let me call out beautiful Jen. So Jen had a lovely comment in the community. I think it was yesterday. She goes, "Wow, so many light bulb moments. I have my biomarker results and was so happy to see that I am not diabetic. Being a nurse who deals with eyes and sees the impact of diabetes on our vision, she's, so happy that she's not in that diabetic state. I'm showing A bit of inflammation, some thyroid issues, some iron studies on the low side of normal, but I am celiac. So the biggest issue is cholesterol. She says, I really feel that DEXA scans are vital, not just for women, for everyone. I was diagnosed with celiac disease, and a DEXA scan is showing a bit of osteoporosis. Now I need to listen to the workshop some more and try to unravel some more of my markers. So thanks so much. And I'm so glad, Jen, even as a nurse and someone with your medical background, that you're finding and learning so much about yourself on the program. And then we've got Mel. I just wanted to recommit. This is a really interesting one, actually. I just wanted to recommit. Already, life seems to get in the way of making good health choices as the year draws to an end and there is so much to do. Yet I know I have to prioritize healthy choices. So I've taken the time to start again at the very beginning. I am going to commence week one again on Monday. And between now and then, I'm getting sorted, watching the videos, preparing the recipes, shopping, getting my exercise scheduled and sorted. So, and slow and steady wins the race. And I just wondered, I thought a couple of you might resonate with this. Who's feeling like they're sort of a bit behind the eight ball, or they're, not feeling as organized as they'd like to be? Let me know if that is you. Yes, Anita, Jodi Ann. Oh, Jodi Ann, change your settings from host and panelist to everyone. Dolly, Kim. Okay. Oh, good. I'm glad you're enjoying the meals. And so is your husband, Kim. That's amazing. I just want to reiterate that this is not one of those extremely strict and structured plans that if you deviate a little bit, then you've fallen off the wagon and it's all gone out the window. I don't want you to think of it like that. I want you to think of it rather as a framework that you can follow and that you can take at your own pace. And some of you are going full bore, you're following the meal plans, you're watching all the videos. But if you're not, don't stress. Even if you're picking one to three small little actionable changes that you can be making each week, that's going to be putting you in really good stead. And so is the education from the videos. And so I don't know if you agree, Yasmina, but my goal for you would be to use this time to really understand what your biomarkers are telling you by watching, especially that first live workshop. And then picking the weeks that the markers are relevant for you. So, for example, if your metabolic markers are elevated, you watch the week two on metabolic health. Would you agree, Yasmina?
Yes, I do. And another thing that I said, look, the everything accelerates in this second part of the year. And then most definitely I feel, I'm not doing everything I should be doing. But I go through this mental process at the end of the day and I go, yeah, today may not have been great. Tomorrow can be better if I do this. And then I try to do whatever that one this is, early in the day, because I know, if I've scheduled something after about 2 p.m., it's got progressively lower chances of happening. So, and that process of, finishing the day and going, how could tomorrow be better? And then that one thing, getting it done early. That's what I would say.
Yes, there's that concept of eat the frog. I don't know if you've heard of that, but this idea of whatever is the yuckiest thing or the most important and the big thing, you eat the frog, you do it first, get it off, get the monkey off your back. So yeah, I love that. And let me just share. So I'll just say one more. So Nat wrote, I just finished the inflammation section on our foundations course. So informative. Thank you, Dr. Yasmina and Amelia, for being so inspirational. My win after completing our spring challenge is I actually like push-ups and I now include them in my usual workouts, which I think is just fantastic. See, we can get you to like push-ups. Now I just want to show you a couple of quick photos as well. As you guys know, we've got our sweaty snaps competition. So for this month, I would love, and we're seeing some awesome photos come across, but for every time you post a lovely sweaty selfie or a sweaty snap, here we have Therese and Donna. And Donna, you're on here as Bronte. I'm assuming Bronte's one of those other gorgeous girls in that photo. And then we've got a lovely little montage of some of the cool stuff our members are doing. So make sure you post your sweaty snaps because it just it makes our day. And every time you post a picture, it's one entry into our Lululemon $100 gift voucher competition. All right. Wonderful. And mini win, Charlie Ellis used to lurch from bed and sit clutching that first coffee. Now I have a flavorsome herbal turmeric tea, dash of apple cider vinegar, then a savory breakfast, then a coffee, which seems to taste even better. I relapsed a few days ago, started again with a coffee, poor night's sleep, found that when I sat down to do the first Zoom, I was a bit shaky. Ah, very good.
Very
Very good.
interesting.
Yeah.
Very.
There's actually a whole piece around caffeine cycling. Which we haven't even talked about. I'm going on Channel 9 on Friday morning to talk about caffeine cycling, which is basically having periods of, lower intakes of caffeine, so that then when you do have more caffeine, you get a bigger benefit from it. So anyway, I'll post the recording once it's aired.
It's worth it. It's worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, guys. And I'm loving, yes, all these comments, and we've got time for questions as we go through. So if I've missed any questions, please ask them again and we'll get back. All right. So kicking off, we're going to move straight into part one, which is all about gut health. And does anyone here have any IBS or gut issues? After I had one of my baby number three, I went through about 6 months of terrible IBS, and I had to work with a integrative GP before I found you, Dr. Yasmina, to heal it. Kim, yes, IBS. Okay. So why is it important that sometimes, or first of all, Yasmina, why is it that sometimes when we start a new program, such as Inner Vitality, even though it's super healthy food, for some people, they might get more tummy upsets when they switch to a healthier diet. What is causing this?
It's your microbiome. And your microbiome is like basically a population of subcontractors that lives in your gut, right? So, I like to personify them in a way. So it's like who's there and what they're used to digesting, right? So if you change what you feed them, well, they're not used to it as well. So there's this transition period. And then during that transition period, you basically have a population of those subcontractors that are not used to digesting what you're giving them. And that population would slowly be reducing. And then slowly you would be increasing the members of your microbiome that are more responsive to now this better nutrition, better diet, right? So during this transition period, you're more likely to be experiencing bloating. And some of you, if you've even tried, various, what I call them, gut magic products that have prebiotics, and you will probably know that, oh my God, I had a good dollop full of that and then I bloated. It's supposed to be good stuff. Well, yes, it's good stuff if you've got good subcontractors, but you may not. So you need some time to adjust. And you know what? And the change in diet can actually unmask issues like SIBO, so small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. And you know what? Also, sometimes with bloating comes reflux. Like literally, as you bloat, you increase that pressure inside your abdomen, and you can squeeze your stomach, and then you get reflux. So, we have had people say, yes, your wonderful diet, but it doesn't agree with me. And that second thing doesn't it doesn't agree with your current microbiome. So patience, slow changes, and being aware that this is tradition, a transition, and things get better.
And I often liken it to a gym. And if I led you straight into the weights room of a gym when you've never done strength before, and I took you straight over to a rack and got you to squat 100 kilos, of course, it's going to be a very uncomfortable outcome. Well, if your gut and your microbiome is not used to dealing with the amount of fiber that they're suddenly being given, then it's that Same idea. So you lessen the load for them while you're adjusting and while the bad bacteria are dying out and the healthy bacteria are starting to proliferate. And it might just be backing that off a little bit. What else could be causing this IBS? So if it's not necessarily that diet change, what are some other things that can be causing this irritable bowel syndrome?
Well, first of all, is it, let's circle back to that IBS diagnosis. It's a diagnosis of exclusion. So you've got to make sure that you've been checked out for all the serious things, and you may have even had an endoscopy, colonoscopy. It's all clear, nothing serious medical, and then you're left with that. So IBS is usually constipation, diarrhea, sometimes both, sometimes alternating, sometimes bloating, sometimes food intolerances and all of that. And now we know that it's got a big, big overlap with something that we call SIBO, so small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. So your small intestine is like a plate of spaghetti. It's got thin wall. It's really, really long. It's not meant to have large bacterial population. Unlike your large intestine, which is much shorter, thicker walled, better container, etc. However, if you're not digesting well and you've got lots of bacteria in your small intestine, so that, in this long, loose tube, you might be fermenting and you might be producing gases like methane, which can paralyze your bowel, equals constipation. You can produce hydrogen gas, which can irritate your bowel, equals diarrhea. You can alternate between the two. And you bloat. So, this is SIBO, and as I said, large overlap with what we used to call irritable bowel syndrome. You can have parasites, don't amoeba blastocystis, very common ones. Conditions that appear unrelated to the gut can actually very much originate in the gut, like skin conditions, eczema, psoriasis. Gut issues can worsen other conditions like endometriosis, because a gut microbiome has a huge role in estrogen metabolism. And then, some of you, if you have rheumatoid conditions, joint aches, pains, you probably have noticed when your gut is worse, your muscle aches, pains are worse. And then, of course, as I said, before you call it irritable bowel or, SIBO, you must know that it's not actually inflammatory bowel disease like Crohn's and ulcerative colitis, and you do need an endoscopy to confirm that.
So what you've just said is quite mind-blowing and mind-boggling. And, for someone that's dealing with gut issues, it can just be a massive minefield. So I'm just going to kind of sum up what you just said. And this is essentially, these are the really common causes of these gut issues. So we spoke about irritable bowel, which is what you just said, and that's, constipation, diarrhea, or food intolerances. So that's sort of one that you might be ticking the box going, yep, that's me. You've got SIBO, which was that bacterial overgrowth that you just mentioned as well. You said parasites as well. And then you said these other conditions, such as, skin conditions and joint and endometriosis can. So they're basically the most common, I guess, gut issues that you see presenting. Is that right?
Well, they are, some of them are gut issues, and some of them are things that people don't necessarily link with gut, but when you scratch below the surface, you realize that actually they've got very real and significant gut connection.
On that note, and Stephanie, I'm going to get to your question in just a moment. I want to just tell you guys that you're on the Inner Vitality program, but you're also inside our Vitality 360 membership platform. And there is another course that's included in your membership called our Foundations course. And I'm just going to quickly share screen if I can. There, we've got a whole module on gut health. And I have to say, guys, Yasmina does the best job of distilling down gut health into these kind of four key pillars. So if it's an issue for you, you'll just go up to the dashboard on Vitality 360, and you'll see this course called Foundations course. And you see there's all these topics. There's four key topics. There's inflammation, metabolic health, hormone health, and then there's gut health. And there's two videos, the role of gut health, and then supporting your gut health. I would recommend you watch those if gut health is kind of a really big concern for you, because it's really, really fascinating, and it goes into a lot more detail about gut health if you're interested. So Yasmina, Stephanie's got a question. How long might it take for your gut to adjust, or does it just depend on the position your gut's in at the starting point, i.e. some of us might adjust to improved quality of the food intake more quickly than others?
Look, it's the latter. And you can think about the microbiome almost as the, having a more fixed set of, I guess the subcontractors. And that is what can be determined by how you were set up in early childhood, your family environment, your genetics, etc. And then you can think about a sort of having a pool that is much more flexible, and that interacts with your environment, sleep, lifestyle, diet, very quickly, right? And so that is where some of the frustration comes with people when they go, hey, the person next to me can get away with a hell of a lot. And look at me, I basically can't get away with anything. So person next to you might actually have really good, robust initial microbiome setup, so that flexible bit doesn't have to be optimal. Whereas you might have some inbuilt challenges, and for you to be feeling well, you really have to optimize that flexible bit. So, I mean, I've simplified it, but I hope it makes sense.
And I just want to also reiterate something that Gally has just commented on. She said she had constant bloating all the time, but since I've been on the program, it has reduced significantly. And just know that we have put specific nutrients and ingredients in the meal plan, such as certain herbal teas like hibiscus tea, parsley. You'll notice the first few weeks, you guys are probably sick of parsley, but parsley is a fantastic de-bloater. And you can even, Yasmina, this was a trick that you taught me. You can literally get your big old parsley bunch, just kind of roughly tear it up, get one of those coffee plungers. Pop it in the coffee plunger with boiling water. You might want to put some mint in there too, or whatever you want. And I just drink it as parsley tea as a de-bloater.
It's great. It's great.
So do go and have a look at that module over on our foundations course. And we're going to be running a gut health program next year that uses microbiome mapping. So do you want to just quickly explain, because it is such a minefield and people don't know what the root cause of their gut issues are. This microbiome mapping test is just one tool that you have. Do you want to just give us a quick overview of what a test, this is a stool test, and what it might help you uncover?
So look, I mean, there's a lot of ways you can look at a gut, and there's lots of variations on tests in the market and discussion about it. The one that I like to use, I guess it's a, and the reason I like to use it is because it gives us some functional gut markers. So about gut permeability, your ability to produce digestive enzymes, your ability to produce secretory IgA, which tells us about the health of your gut mucosa and the ability of that first line of immune system to respond. We look at parasites, and we look at pathogenic bacteria, we look at your subcontractors, those guardians of the microbiome. So it is a really, really good overview of what is happening, and what we plan to do is really guide you through it in a way we have guided Inner Vitality people through their biomarkers. Again, it is something that I do on daily basis and one-on-one, but I would love to be able to share it with more of you and make it more accessible.
I'm super excited to do this. It's a very, and especially after that gut health module, the way you explained how clearly we can determine the issues, I'm super, super excited to get our members onto that. Now, Stephanie is just also saying that, she's feeling like it's worth persisting with, which is great. But I guess similar to my gym analogy, Stephanie, if you need to back the fiber, often it's that, that extra amount of fiber that you're getting from all these beautiful whole foods. If you're still getting a lot of gut issues, back that off a bit. It's a bit like taking the weights off the squat bar that I was just talking about. That might help you just adjust a little bit, but certainly continue to pull out those ultra processed foods because they're what are very pro-inflammatory. So even pulling out the ultra processed foods and just slowly ratcheting up the whole foods makes a big difference. There's another thing, Yasmina, that causes our gut health to deteriorate, and it's something none of us can avoid, and that is bloody aging. Why
Yeah,
is
well,
it?
Anna was saying, what's the root of IBS? What can we do, right? So, one of the, I don't know if I'm answering the entirety of your questions, is about four parts, but stomach acid declines with age, right? And even if you're making digestive enzymes, that acid, stomach acid, is necessary for you to activate digestive enzymes, right? And if you are not digesting very well, then it's a greater risk of SIBO. And then there's a whole host of medications which can trip us. So PPIs, for those of you who are going by a brand name, so that's your Nexium, that is, pantoprazole, esomeprazole, etc. So they lower stomach acid and they increase the risk of SIBO. So a lot of you might be taking them for reflux, but down the line, that it creates other problems. Then non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, so that's your Nurofen, your Voltaren, your Mobix, etc. So they increase gut permeability and again create trouble down the line. And of course, because we have a lot of female population in the 50s, 60s, menopause. And what comes with menopause is decline in mucosal health. Now, that decline in mucosal health actually increases your risk of UTIs, which increases your chances of using antibiotics. It has a knock-on effect to microbiome. And something that I found incredibly fascinating, and I don't know why I haven't thought of that. Don't know why. But, a gut lining is essentially still mucosa. And estrogen has a powerful effect on the mucosa. So, your drop in estrogen and transition to menopause also has an effect on gut mucosa, gut permeability, gut health, etc. And that is, to me, just a perfectly sound explanation why we see an increase in gut-related issues, as we transition towards menopause and lower estrogen levels. So, yeah.
And this is where we talk a bit about collagen, which I know we will be later on, and how that can help. All right. So, are there any quick wins for those of us that are wanting to improve our gut health? What kind of quick wins do you have? Obviously, following our meal plan is a great start, especially if your gut is tolerating it really well. I mean, that's amazing.
So simplest is feed your subcontractors, your microbiome. And here's why, we need the metabolites that microbiome makes. I love talking about urolithin A, which Acromantia makes, which then positively influences your mitochondria. Remember, mitochondria energy factories, key to your metabolism. Microbiome makes more serotonin than our brains. If you feed your microbiome, eating a rainbow, eating lots of fiber, serotonin improves your mood. Therefore, you then end up making better decisions about food. It's just that cycle. Microbiome can only make this if you give it raw ingredients, remember. And the raw ingredients are fiber and phytonutrients. So when I say phytonutrients, the simplest thing is eating a rainbow. And Amelia, I think we put it in a Vitality, that handout, when people check how many colors they've eaten in a day. It is such a really cool thing to think about. And all of a sudden you go, ooh, there's too much yellow and brown in my day,
I will pop this in the cheat sheet for tonight. It's a really simple chart that you can mark off over a week of literally how many different colored foods you ate throughout the week. And it's kind of around eating the rainbow. And it's a really interesting and also fun way to just have a bit of a check. Are you eating too many beige foods, or have you got, all the different colors of the rainbow? Because they're all the different phytonutrients, which is, all of them play their role.
And then you know what? Like in life happens. So if you have had to have antibiotics or whatever reason, just follow it with some probiotics. And my favorite choice for that is Ultraflora Intensive Care from Metagenics. It's got such a good combo of lactobacilli, bifidobacteria, and Saccharomyces boulardii, which is a probiotic anti-inflammatory yeast. And by the way, Saccharomyces boulardii is also brilliant for preventing traveler's diarrhea. So,
And
so
so,
that's a really low-hanging fruit.
yeah, and I so for Anna and sorry, Stephanie and Deborah, for example, if any of you are getting some of those IBS issues, especially when you're eating more fiber, that probiotic supplement that Dr. Yasmina just recommended, which I'm going to pop into the cheat sheet, that Ultraflora is a fantastic one. And maybe you do want to give your gut bugs a little bit of assistance by adding those probiotics in there as well. And so, like Yasmina, for Deborah, for example, who's just written and said both times, about 3 hours after she had the beetroot in the and the quinoa salad, she felt sick, bloated, and had diarrhea. So can you maybe just explain essentially what could have happened? Because beetroot, for example, is like one of the closest things to a superfood that you can imagine. If your body can tolerate beetroot, then you should be having as much of it as you can.
Well, first of all, I pull things apart. Is it beetroot? Is it quinoa? Right? So, and as you said, there's lots of benefits to eating beetroot. Those phytonutrients, it's real rich in nitrates. It can help you lower blood pressure or improve the blood flow, right?
Improve energy.
Quinoa,
It's actually almost like it's sport. Athletes use it
it is
as a performance enhancer. It
beetroot shot.
dilates your blood vessels, so you're able to
Right.
carry more oxygen around. Beetroot is remarkable.
So is quinoa, because quinoa is one of those rare things when it's a plant-based complete protein. I would say, but quinoa can be, if you can taste that little bitterness to quinoa, then try, and you could be reacting to chemicals that make that. So try soaking your quinoa and then rinsing it before you cook it. And as I said, it's a plant-based protein. Sometimes it's not easy to digest, so perhaps you're not digesting your quinoa well. So first of all, I'd separate quinoa and the beetroot, work out which one it is. If it is quinoa, I would try soaking it, rinsing it, and then cooking it. And then if you're still having problems with that, and if you want to stick with quinoa, try eating it with while taking some digestive enzymes and see if you can improve its digestion. So those are the tips.
Okay. And don't think you've got bowel cancer about 12 to 24 hours after eating beetroot. We've all done it,
No,
right?
and the urine looks pink as well.
I think on that note, shall we move on to part two of tonight, which is weight loss and nutrition strategies? Oh yeah, Leanne, it happened to her. She thought she was dying when she looked in the toilet bowl. Yeah, and Eliza, a lot of people don't tolerate kale very well. And in fact, Dr. Yasmina doesn't recommend raw kale for anyone with thyroid issues. So there you go. Spinach is a
No,
good one.
raw kale, raw cruciferous vegetables like broccoli, cauliflower. Just cook them, blanch them, steam them. And yeah, look, if you can't do kale, do spinach, do silver beet. Doesn't matter.
Or
All
cook your
good.
kale. All right, we are shifting gears into weight management. Summer is around the corner. Who doesn't want to shift a few kilos? By the way, has anyone discovered that they're insulin resistant or pre-diabetic? Remember, if you look at your HOMA score on your biomarker results, you'll be able to see if your HOMA score is inching up towards insulin resistance. If you've got any questions about that, we can pop up some results and talk you through that if you feel like you need a bit more explanation. But I wanted to, I guess, Yasmina, one of the met you and I love tracking. We love metrics, but there is one metric that you and I are not big fans of, and that is the scales. And I guess, my experience with scales is that it's so demotivating, sometimes demoralizing. And you can, I've had members that are achieving amazing results in their life through fitness, through lifestyle changes, through health, and the scales aren't necessarily reflecting those. And then they get demotivated and they stop everything. But I guess I want to ask you to kick off this topic. How someone can be metabolically healthy but still carrying extra weight.
Okay, so to talk about this, we kind of have to introduce Peter Attia's concept of where we store fat, right? So, and that's subcutaneous versus visceral fat. So, subcutaneous basically means under the skin. So, that's your surface fat. And in women, especially while we've still got our estrogen on board, that's your thighs, that's your hips, that's what contributes to your hourglass shape kind of thing, right? Versus the visceral fat. Viscera means organs. So you start putting them around your organs, essentially in your abdomen. So that's your apple shape, right? And generally, if you're putting the fat under the skin, so that's subcutaneous fat, that's a safe place to put them, to put it. When you start putting it around the organs, you're causing inflammation, organ malfunction, etc. That's not a good storage spot, right? So you can actually be skinny fat and metabolically unhealthy. So in other words, you can look skinny and still have significant fat deposition around your organs and within your organs. In fact, when I was doing anesthetics, the surgeons would open up somebody on the table and go, "Oh, skinny fat." And that's exactly what you see when you peer inside someone's abdomen. Which then is really, really confusing because you can be overweight by, the scale numbers and relatively metabolically healthy. This does exist because basically what you've done is you've stored the fat in that subcutaneous compartment. It doesn't interfere with the organ function, less likely to cause inflammation. You're actually metabolically tracking okay.
We have a few members on the program that fit that bill. I don't know if Sammy is on here tonight, but Sammy is a my best dear, dear friend who I make anyone that I love do in a vitality because it's this, I always call it the sleep well at night biomarker test. Sam has struggled with her weight her whole life. And she's never done these markers before. We had no idea she could have been pre-diabetic, whatever. But Sam is Marilyn Monroe. Even though she's struggled with her weight, she's got this hourglass figure, and then she's got these, lovely, meaty thighs and beautiful big hips. But anyway, she's metabolically perfect, and her cholesterol's fine. Even though she, if you saw her, in the flesh, she knows she's carrying that extra weight. So there's a perfect example of someone that just by virtue of the fact that they're carrying their weight through that subcutaneous. And so for us, it's great because it's not as much of a health issue, although she still wants to manage her weight.
And if that is your scenario, then yes, you're up against the advertised version of female, but that's what it is. It's the advertised version. And importantly, when we look at the healthy version, you tick the boxes. So if that, it sometimes we are just, our bodies just don't conform to whatever is on the in the retail window.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why it's important, rather than just looking at the number on the scale, go to those metabolic markers. It's your HbA1c percentage and your HOMA, which is that combination of fasting insulin, that's gonna, and your cholesterol. All of those are giving you a much better picture. So a lot of our metabolic health will come from reducing the amount we eat, or getting us out of that state of overfed, which is what a lot of us are in the obesogenic environment that we live in here in Australia. So a lot of it will come from reducing the amount meat we eat, especially those processed carbohydrates, other processed foods. So I wanted to ask you guys, how are you all going with reducing those processed foods and those simple carbohydrates out of your diet? Do you feel like you have made an adjustment in that? And while people are commenting on that, Dr. Yasmina, what are your some of your suggestions for the best ways to stop this overfed paradigm that you talk about?
You know what? Like I do a lot of negotiation with myself and a lot of conversations with myself. And in fact, I have a couple of friends, I've talked through this and they said, "Oh, I now have your checklist on my fridge." And my checklist is something like this. Are you thirsty or you are hungry? How about you first try and drink? And that goes, water, herbal teas, teas containing licorice tastes sweet. And I love that. So that combination of licorice, peppermint, fennel is great for tummy, not for you if you have a high blood pressure, because licorice can get your blood pressure up. But that's the first thing. And then the next thing is like, okay, you're hungry, make sure you eat some fiber. So, and that means vegetables. And I just open the fridge and go, okay, let's hit capsicum and cucumber first and chop some of those. And some protein, so that's usually nuts, seeds, and I try and use the, perhaps activated almonds because I digest them well, walnuts I digest well, right? So this will make you less hungry and will not spike your blood sugars. And I'm going, no, still not doing it, still not doing it. And then I go for a square of dark chocolate. For me, it's 85% or so. It's also a great source of magnesium. It's got a little high in cacao. Cacao is one of those phytonutrients, right? And then people ask me, like, so what's the logic of all of that? Well, the logic of that is your body could be hungry for nutrients, not calories, And the body doesn't actually make a distinction, because proportionally, the more calories you eat, you should be eating more nutrients. So, you go, like, it doesn't make that distinction. But in our modern environment, it's actually really, really easy to consume a truckload of calories. We're consuming next to no nutrients. So that's the concept of when I consume, I not only consume calories, I consume valuable nutrients. And that fluid, fiber, and protein is what makes you feel full. So
Honestly,
that's a strategy.
it's nature's Ozempic. I kid you not. If you get the right amount of protein for your body's needs, usually that's sort of 1 to 1.5 grams for every kilo you weigh, you are so full. And a lot of our members comment when they start having a protein supplement, like a protein powder, or really just making sure they're adding that tin of tuna into their salad or whatever, you feel so full. And so your combination of water, fiber, and protein, like we don't need Ozempic. It'll give you that slow gastric empty, because all Ozempic's doing is slowing that gastric emptying so that you're feeling fuller for longer. And we've got some great comments coming in. We've got Bronte, sorry, Donna is saying she loves the meal plan, doesn't miss the carbs at all. She's feeling better, cleaner. Tara was a hard adjustment, taking willpower not to grab these foods for a quick fix, but noticing the benefits already. And Fiona's found it really easy to omit the processed foods and don't miss them. And she's not getting the afternoon crash where you're looking for those foods.
That's it, that's it.
Yeah. So I'm going to add a couple more tips to your Nature's Ozempic. So your Nature's Ozempic combo trifecta was water, fiber, and protein. I'm gonna also throw in there, and by the way, these are all baked into the meal plan, but a prolonged overnight fast. So this concept of delaying that first meal of the day as late as you can and squishing your meals in. I'm a very active person. I only have two meals a day and a snack in the middle. I have a brunch, a big brunch, and I have my family dinner. I have my brunch around nine, between 9 and 10, and I have my family dinner at 6. And I find that I just need something very small in the middle. And that's essentially how our meal plan is designed. That's another tip for you guys. And the other one is this concept of food sequencing, where you start your meal with the high fiber first before you go on to whether it's the protein or the sweet foods. They find that's really good for managing blood sugar levels. And the other tip I have is to feel hungry below the neck for 15 minutes twice a day. And a really great experiment with yourself is not to eat breakfast until you've felt that real grumble in your stomach for, and then sit with it for 15 minutes and then eat. And I find that I often get to dinner and I'm like, oh dear, bugger, it's 6 p.m. It's my dinner time, but I'm actually not feeling hungry for dinner, which is really annoying because I'd like to time it so that I get to dinner having been hungry for 15 minutes.
And you know what? You can actually apply some of those tips even when you're eating out. So my family love this particular pizza place, and they do have amazing pizza. And I used to go and just totally demolish that pizza that's in front of me. And now what I do is they also have side salads, right? So I said to them, you know what? Bring me that salad first, like even before you bring the pizza, because pizza takes time. So I actually eat that salad, and it's almost like somebody's just slowed me down, and I'm halfway through the pizza, and you go, I'm really enjoying it, I'm not inhaling it, and by the time I've eaten two-thirds of it, I don't actually need more. So you can apply this even when going out.
Yeah, fantastic. Absolutely. And with the silly season upon us, and we are going to be running a special workshop outside of Inner Vitality, but you're all welcome to come along to it, which is all about surviving the silly season. A great tip is around planning. If you know you've got a big meal coming up because it's a Christmas lunch or a, party or whatever it might be, is going, well, that's going to be probably two-thirds of my energy needs for the day. So I'm going to plan the rest of the day around that. And and that way it's not going to have as much of an impact as the silly, because the silly season can do a lot of damage to our health, as much as I want us all to have fun and relax, but we need to do it within a certain parameter. All right. So we did mention Ozempic, and I don't want to touch on it too much. I just want to get your quick overview on Ozempic, particularly for our members who have got some real metabolic issues that, are putting them at an increased risk of some chronic diseases. Are you pro Ozempic, absolutely against it, case by case basis? Yasmina, we'd love your thoughts.
Look, I'll use every tool in the toolbox, and Ozempic is a tool in the toolbox. And I think of it in a similar way as SSRIs or antidepressants. I do put people on antidepressants because that can enable them to actually get out, to start exercising, to see a psychologist, to start making those changes, to, develop habits that will actually help them wean off. Same deal with Ozempic. I don't see it as standalone solution. I see it as a tool that might give you a bit of mental space, might give you a bit of weight loss, might make you feel better, might give you that space, and a break from torture of being hungry all the time, of craving, of being really, really inflamed because you're making bad food choices, etc. So give you a break from that. Give you space to get your head around all these concepts that we're talking about. Give you a bit of, take away some of that fear that you have, from making changes, because you may have made changes in the past and they backfired. So we put you, if I put you on the Ozempic, take away some of that fear, give you a bit of freedom to listen to what we're saying, to perhaps even back up from the exercise that's, it's just not suited to you right now, it's inflaming you, to give you some space to migrate towards better diet. So it's a tool. It's a can be a great tool, but while you're using it, we are also working on a whole host of other things that will, make it possible for you to get off Ozempic and do it all on your own eventually.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you for clarifying that. Now we're going to move on to part three in a second, but there was a question I can't find it. So I'm sorry, I don't know who asked this question, but they wanted a protein powder, but they said that they can get constipated. And so, what is the sort of gentlest? They're looking for a protein powder that might not constipate them so much. I can just tell you anecdotally that I find the plant-based protein powders less bloating and triggering constipation than the whey-based. But the problem is the whey-based is the more superior. So if you can tolerate whey protein powder, go for it. But the whey that I use does sometimes constipate me, whereas I find so that's true protein, whereas I find the Healthy Chef plant-based protein doesn't constipate me at all. And I also find if you take it in combination with a little bit more fiber, so whether it's just your Metamucil or, a simple fiber supplement, or a probiotic, that makes a really big difference to prevent that constipation as well.
Put it on. Yep.
Okay, good. All right, we are going to shift gears again now, and we're going to fly through some of the hidden health issues to be aware of. Now, a lot of you joined Inner Vitality because you're suffering from low energy and just this general low-grade feeling of not being well. And so, by looking at our biomarkers, we're getting this snapshot of our health and what's going on under the hood. But for some of us, the answers are not there, and we're still scratching our heads going, there was nothing screaming out at me from the biomarkers. Where to next? So, what we're about to discuss are a bunch of hidden health issues that could be contributing to your low energy. All right. So, we're going to fly through these now. And just remember that I get blown away by how many of our members are impacted by these. So, the first one, Dr. Yasmina, when it comes to the hundreds of patients that you have worked with, what's a couple of these key health issues that you would like to draw our attention to?
Well, the first one that is a really hidden epidemic is osteopenia, osteoporosis, right? So you're not going to walk into your doctor's office and say, I've got low bone density. So unless you test, you don't know. And a lot of our members, who might be in their 60s or so, particularly, are part of generation when we were very, very, very afraid of HRT. And that, because of that, they're at the greater risk of osteopenia, osteoporosis because you lost your estrogen early, you did not replace it, right? So anyone who's approaching 50 or is 50 plus and hasn't had a bone scan, I really suggest you have one to discover where you are. And even if you're younger and have had some of the risk factors, such as conditions that require you take steroids, or you had digestive issues like a celiac disease, inflammatory bowel disease, if you had bulimia, anorexia, eating disorder, that sort of thing. If you were overtraining and lost your periods for extended period of time, all of you guys should be having bone density scans to figure out where you stand. Because at the currently we are not screening, and the first time you get to find out you have a problem is when you break a bone, that's too late.
And I can't tell you how many of our members we've sent off for a bone density DEXA scan. And yes, anyone can go and get one done. They're about $100. It takes 10 minutes. You lay on a bed. It's a very low radiation, like less than a trip from Sydney to Melbourne. And you will get your bone density score. And I think that everyone over the age of 40 should get one, but particularly if you've had, like Yasmina said, any of those hormone issues, if there's a family history, if you're a slighter frame as well, or if you haven't been very active, get tested for osteopenia and osteoporosis. It's a big one. It's a really big one. All right, the second one, Yasmina, which I'm sure I always thought this was an old man overweight condition, but you've drawn my attention that it's not.
Sleep apnea, right? And
Crazy.
you know what?
Crazy.
Like in medical school, it's just exactly the same profile that I've been kind of given and taught about. So it's a kind of a shorter, stouter man with a shorter neck and the pot belly, right? That's who you think of as I think it's sleep apnea. But it's becoming increasingly obvious that that's not quite the case. In fact, women again are at increased risk of sleep apnea as they approach menopause. Dropping progesterone levels can interfere with regulation of your sleep breathing. And it's really sleep apnea basically means while you're sleeping, your breathing becomes disordered, your oxygen levels drop. Then you, even if you're not aware of it, you basically wake up. You're not getting into those deeper stages of sleep. You're disrupting hormones that are supposed to be at work while you sleep. And consequently, you disrupt your metabolism, right? It's a knock-on effect,
What
right?
are the key signs that might trigger you to ask someone to go and get a sleep apnea test? What for our members tonight, what are some of those signs that they might experience?
So there are some overt signs, but this is only when your sleep apnea is really severe. Your partner might be complaining about your snoring, or you might be complaining about you having these kind of spasmodic breathing, which is like when in the night, but that's really late. If you're waking up tired, if you're feeling really sleepy during the day, you've got no other reason for it. I'm about to fall asleep at the traffic light, or I can't finish watching a TV show. If you've got high blood pressure and you haven't actually worked out why, sleep apnea can contribute to it. If you're struggling metabolically, so higher blood sugars, again, you're doing everything right. You can't figure out why. Well, if you have sleep apnea, you'll be running higher on cortisol. It'll be difficult to regulate your blood sugars. So all of those are kind of little giveaways. Another one that people don't think about is if you keep going to toilet, waking up to urinate during the night, because if you have sleep apnea and you disrupt this hormonal orchestra, you are not producing antidiuretic hormones. So your kidneys think that you are still awake. They keep making urine and filling up your bladder, right? So you actually need to be in deep sleep for your kidneys to go, all righty, now hold on until we wake up.
Yep. And the great news is that you don't need to go to a full sleep clinic. You can actually just go to your local chemist. You rent a little device and you pop it on your finger and then you sleep with it on, and then it will give you a very strong indication. In fact, I've got a comment from Janet this week. She wrote, "I followed up and did this sleep test with a device from Blooms the Chemist. The cost was $119 to hire the device. I was completely surprised when my results showed that I have moderate sleep apnea. I never suspected for a moment that I have this condition. I only did the test out of curiosity. My next step is to follow up with my GP. This is a great suggestion." So if you guys are lacking in energy and you're trying to work out what on earth it could be, sleep apnea can be one of those things, and it's much more common. All right, so let's move on. We've got a couple more. We've got three more hidden health issues that you'd like to draw our attention to. What are they?
Yeah, so there's one is a periodontal inflammation and disease. So it's a gum disease. I'm actually seeing more signs of it because now they're testing for bacteria that are typical of it. They're starting to show up in the microbiome of people, which is really quite interesting. But if you've got fragile bleeding gums, if you've got family history of it, it can be something that's driving inflammation. And you know what? Visit to a dentist is very worthwhile, and there is a link between bacteria causing periodontal disease and atherosclerosis. They've actually found them in atherosclerotic plaques, just as a mold exposure. If you have lived in water damaged buildings, if you've been exposed to mold, and then your health deteriorated. that is something to think about. There is there are ways of testing for mycotoxins in your urine, etc. And then joint pain is quite a popular topic. So some of you might have osteoarthritis, which is largely a mechanical issue. There is smaller inflammatory component, but it's really, really, really important to make sure that you do not have a rheumatoid arthritis or gout or psoriatic arthritis or some of those conditions that will cause permanent damage to joints and need to be diagnosed and need to be appropriately managed, right? So as usual, when it comes to those things, I say complete your thorough investigations, make sure you've cleared those red flags, and then we can concentrate on helping you with what's left on the table.
Yeah, great. Excellent. It blows my mind about mold exposure, by the way, and how many people that is impacted by as well. Are there any supplements for joint health? Are there any supplements that you particularly recommend for those of us that have really sore joints?
You know what? There's been a lot of controversy around collagen, and people have been saying, well, you can't just eat collagen and then it lands in your joint. Well, that is true, but now we have evidence that collagen peptides, that's why collagen is usually hydrolyzed when you have it, actually act as a signaling molecules and have an anti-inflammatory effect on the joint. Also, if you're eating collagen, if you want to resynthesize it, so you actually break it down just like a Lego structure. And what gets to the other side is the building blocks. And then you'll need to put it back together. And you will need zinc and vitamin C to be able to do that. So again, you can have collagen, but you also have to have excellent nutrition to be able to put it together on the other side. For osteoarthritis, weight loss is really important, strengthening the muscles that support the affected joint. So that's usually knees and hips. And then there's plant-based anti-inflammatories. And these are things like curcumin, bromelains, even quercetin. There are some, that is something that you should have a go at. And for those who have a rheumatoid arthritis, you do really need to be followed by a specialist. There's lots and lots of really good treatment options. Don't leave this unattended. Don't sit on joints that are irreversibly deteriorating. Don't be afraid of treatment.
No, absolutely. And for people over the age of 45, and particularly once we're through perimenopause, our collagen levels drop by up to 30%, and that's why we get wrinkles. And one of the things that you educated us on, Yasmina, in that gut health module from our foundations course, is you reminded us that our gut lining is essentially a similar makeup to skin. And so just like our skin gets wrinkled, so does our digestive tract. And you
Get
can
affected,
imagine
yes.
then it's not functioning properly. So collagen, particularly hydrolyzed collagen, which is a supplement form of collagen, has been shown to improve our body's collagen levels. And considering it really does fall off a cliff, if you've got gut issues, if you've got joint issues, because there's a lot of collagen in joints, or you've got hair, skin, and nail issues like thinning hair, thinning nails, more wrinkles. Collagen is an absolutely brilliant supplement. I take it now. It's one of the few supplements that I just take all year round. Our favorite brand is the Designs for Health Whole Body Collagen because it's got the three most researched types of collagens. Anita's asking about ATP Science as a brand. Look, I don't know those collagen. I'd have to look at the ingredients list, but I just know the three most researched types. It's a type called Fortibone, Fortigel, and Verisol. So if you can look on the ingredients, and if you see Verisol is great for hair, skin, and nails, Fortibone is for joint health, and Fortigel is for gut health. So that's why we like the whole body ones.
And I like Chief Collagen just because it comes as a
Yeah, Chief. Chief is fantastic as well. Yeah, and that's an Aussie brand too. And so is the Designs for Health. Okay. Is there anything else before we move on to our final part four, which is really just an open Q&A? Did you have anything else you wanted to chat on our hidden health issues, Dr. Yasmina?
Sorry, can you repeat that? I was reading Fiona's question.
Sorry. Is there anything else we wanted to add to our part three, which was the hidden health issues that we wanted to bring your attention to, which is basically the osteopenia. So your bone health was the first one. Then it was sleep apnea. So if you're waking up exhausted or you've in low energy is an issue. Then it was periodontal, so inflammation. So anything, make sure when you go to your next dentist appointment, ask them if there's any inflammation in your gums, mold exposure, and joint pain. There are all those hidden health
I
issues.
think that's a pretty good roundup
Okay.
of the I will say to Fiona that mix sounds fantastic, and regardless of whether it is a marine or otherwise collagen, it's just the source of collagen, and it can be peptides. Peptide just means chopped up collagen, really, which it can be regardless of what the original source of collagen is, right?
Yeah.
So I wouldn't labor too much on that, but it sounds like a great mix. And it's as Amelia said, just make sure it's a reputable source
Yeah.
that you're going
Yeah,
after.
because there's some really poor quality ones. In fact, I know for a fact that some of the really expensive ones that are more in the, like you see in Mecca and in those more kind of beauty ones, come from very poor sources. So yeah, don't always get on the hype with
Price
the
does
pretty
not always
packaging,
equal
and the
exactly.
price tag doesn't always. That's why I just if it's Fortagel, Fortabone, or Verisol, I'm like great. And if it's hydrolyzed, then they're kind of that's all you need to look for on the ingredients. All right, guys. Well, we are getting towards the end, so I just wanted to check: did we answer all your questions? Was there any? I hope that I didn't miss any questions. And were there any other general questions before we wrapped up tonight? And by the way, a few of you asked about how long you have access to the modules and to the Vitality 360 platform. It's 2 weeks, so after our program finishes, which is on the 16th of December. You've then got 2 more weeks, and you're more than welcome to, you can access anything on Vitality 360, but we have an ongoing membership program. So at the end, you can join for 1, 3, or 6 months, and it's ongoing. And like I said, we've got lots of exciting programs and new testing coming in the new year, but I'll send you an email about that as we get closer to the end of the program. I do kind of want to keep you focused on inner vitality and working your way through the modules
Yeah.
here.
And I'm just going to pick up on Leanne, who says that she has osteopenia. GP hasn't recommended any medication for the moment, but said to make sure I get 1,300 milligrams of calcium and do weight bearing. So good basic advice. But the questions that I would ask is why do you have osteopenia, right? So do you have any of those risk factors that we mentioned that would have started you on a low bone density? Are you in menopause and you've lost your estrogen, and so that accelerates your bone loss? Do you have any inflammatory conditions that are eating in your bone? Do you perhaps have dysregulation of your parathyroid, which is the gland that controls the bone metabolism? So when I see that there is a bone loss, I really, really need to know why. And maybe it's really simple. Maybe it is, you've stepped into the menopause and that's what's happening, but I'd want to know why. And as to what to do, provided all of the above checks out and it's basic intervention. So yes, calcium advice is good. Your vitamin D needs to be between 80 and 100 for you to be able to absorb that calcium optimally. You need some magnesium because magnesium will help you activate your vitamin D. Yes, you will need a bone strengthening so that resistance and impact exercise. And if you are menopausal, the first, kind of line of thinking is If I don't have any risk factors that would prevent me, should I contemplate about HRT because HRT will amplify the effect of that resistance weight bearing exercise? So that's my mini spiel.
And on that note, Yasmina, you and I have been talking about running a program and a lot more education around bone health because we are quite alarmed at how many of our members have osteopenia, which is bone loss, and then moving into osteoporosis. Can I just get a like, yes, I'm interested, or keen to learn more if anyone here would be interested in a little bit more of a structured, course program around, bone health, DEXA, what to do, because there's a lot of emerging research that's coming out that's showing that we can actually improve our bone density. It's coming out of Queensland, actually, University UQ, and Peter Attia has been talking about it. And I actually met a woman, a doctor in her 60s this week in my gym who has osteoporosis, and she has been able to increase her bone density by 2.5% in the last 18 months, and she's in her 60s. So I feel like it's the problem is it's not sexy, it's not painful, it's not like IBS or inflammation or excess weight where it's something that people are living with in pain every day, but it's a silent.
Silent.
Yeah, and it's by the time you get, down the line, it's too late. So yeah, oh cool. If quite a few of you are interested. Okay, well, we'll put some more thinking into that,
Yeah.
because it's something that's we're feeling quite passionate about, aren't we, Yasmina?
Absolutely, absolutely. And you know what? Another thing is, as we've been talking about, we think about bone almost retrospectively. You do your bone scan perhaps every 2 years. I was like, oops, that's what's happened. But it doesn't have to be that way. We now have bone turnover markers, which is basically a blood test that you can do. They can tell you about the rate of bone breakdown. You can track, so these are the interventions that I've done. What's the rate of my bone breakdown now? Am I making a difference? So there's a lot that's happened in this space, and a lot that you can do.
You even
So
talked about, tell me about that biomarker that's a simple blood test that you mentioned
yes,
just before we went live
it's called
tonight.
CTX. So it's called CTX. You do it in the urine, you can do it in the blood. I prefer to do it in the blood because it's more reliable. So it
What is it
basically, as you
measuring?
break down, yeah. So if you, I mean, you have to do it fasted first thing in the morning. It's one of those tests that has certain requirements. But essentially, as you break down bone, you spit out this molecule into the bloodstream, and the faster you break down the bone, the more of it you will detect in the bloodstream, right? And it is actually reasonably quick to react to the interventions, be it the amount of estrogen you have, or the exercise that you have, or changing your calcium metabolism,
Can
etc.
anyone just
So you
please,
can do
Yasmina?
it.
Was it me?
Sorry?
I just lost your
Can you hear
sound.
me? I will change my
No, it's
sound.
me. It was me. Sorry.
Okay.
Yeah, I can hear you again. Sorry, that was me.
Okay.
Oh, shoot.
And yeah, so you can track it. You can do that in 3 months' time, and you go, well, these interventions that I have done are making a real difference. Or for women who are on HRT and have been told just the minimal amount for the minimum amount of time, going, well, we're not quite hitting the target. Let's optimize the amounts, and kaboom, 12 weeks later, we're really seeing a difference in the bone metabolism. So it's exciting that we now have these tools.
Oh, that's wonderful. I agree. I agree. And we should be proactive about it. Okay, I'm going to take one last question. And I think this is actually a really important question for all of us. And I just want to reiterate it. So this is Bronte, who is actually Donna. Curious to know about her metabolic. And she's put some numbers up. So I'm actually just going to share my screen super quickly. And I just want to, if you've got your biomarkers handy, I just want to. I just, if you've got your biomarkers handy, you might want to pull them up for a second. Can you see, did that come up all right? Okay. Just super quick as a reminder, okay, Dr. Yasmina. So she is saying that Donna is saying that her HOMA is 1.39. So this is your HOMA insulin resistance score. So I'm assuming you're in the high end of at 1.39. Oh no, you're sort of down here somewhere. This is not your results, obviously, Donna. I've just pulled up someone's. So at 1.39, she's not insulin resistant. Would you sort of ascertain
I
to
still
that?
want to see HbA1c is still quite high. What is the insulin? I'd still like to know, Bronte, what's your insulin?
Okay. So just looking at this person here that we're looking at on the screen, this person here is, you would call this person insulin resistant,
Yeah, I mean,
correct?
look, I would. I mean, the fasting insulin of 11, yes, I would. Both based on the and based on HOMA. Now, can you read out? It's a five. What's the HbA1c is 5.7, definitely on all three criteria. Yes.
Insulin resistant and borderlining on pre-diabetic because they've got an HbA1c of 5.7. And I
Yeah.
think, Donna, you said yours was 5.6. So, yes. Yeah. So, Donna, best way forward is to listen to the week two video on metabolism because all the strategies are in there and it's a combination of these strategies. There's not one magic, bullet, but the taking the myo-inositol just as a very quick overarching supplementing with the myo-inositol, which is an insulin sensitizer, moving after eating, having a savory breakfast, reducing the total amount of food that you're eating. So reducing that quantity down and that prolonged overnight fast. That's just in a nutshell, some really good strategies that we have used that we see bring those markers right down.
Bronte, this does not look like insulin resistance, and with your insulin of 6, however, HbA1c is higher than I would expect. There are other things that can contribute to your higher HbA1c. Remember, it's like a corrosion mark that's left on your hemoglobin due to higher blood sugar oxidation state. So you could have had, a couple of occasions when your blood sugar hit, maybe you had a pizza or wine night followed by tiramisu, like I occasionally do. Or there is there are some other things that can influence your HbA1c. But based on your HOMA and your insulin, this is not insulin resistance. I love insulin to drive insulin even lower. It's probably within your reach to be sitting at 4, which would be brilliant. So yeah, that's my, quick answer to that.
Fantastic. All right. And Jennifer asked, will we be retesting? We would love you to retest. Basically, if you had a lot of markers in the red, you probably will, and you've been making some changes, retesting between 8 to 12 weeks. If you are very, green and healthy, then testing anywhere from 1 to 4 times per year, we really recommend you test and track. And yeah, look, I think we're probably ready to wrap up. I'll just, Bronte, Donna, just follow the packet instructions for the myo-inositol. But Dr. Yasmina does recommend that you start a little bit lower, maybe on a third. I think it's one scoop a day. So maybe start on a third of a scoop for a couple of days and then 2/3 of a scoop. So just while your tummy adjusts, because you can, some people do in the early stages get a little bit of, IBS when they're first integrating that myo-inositol. All right, we're done. Thank you.
Excellent.
Thank you
Well, thank
so
you
much.
again, guys, for spending a midweek night with us, finding time and, for some great questions and, being part of the journey. So, really enjoyed your company this evening.
Yep, stay focused. Jump onto the meal plan if you can or take inspiration from it. We are so happy that you joined us on this video live or on the replay. And don't be a stranger, jump into the community, post your sweaty snaps. And as always, we're here to answer any questions that you have. All right, bye, Dr. Yasmina.
Bye. Have a good evening.
See you,
Bye.
everyone. Bye.